Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1. With Olay Total Effects Age-Defying Day Cream. Over 100 awards without paying hundreds of euros.
Tweet at Miriam O'Cal. Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1.
Well, her playing has been called phosphorescently brilliant. And when Cora Staunton first put on the green and red of Mayo 24 years ago, she changed the games of women's football forever. She said she won't play for Mayo again. And in her autobiography, Game Changer, which is nominated for an Irish Book Award for Best Sports Book, she sets out her reasons why. She also talks about the highs and the lows of representing her county and her new career on the other side of the world, playing Australian rules football for the Greater Western Sydney Giants. Well, it's a long, long way from her club, Carnacone, for the woman who many call our finest female sports person ever. And I'm delighted to say that Cora Staunton joins me now from Galway. Good morning, Cora.
Good morning, Miriam.
Thanks so much for joining us.
No bother at all.
Listen, first of all, when are you heading back out to Sydney?
Yeah, so I head back on Wednesday week, so in about 10 or 11 days' time.
And you've a brother out there as well, which is great, don't you?
Yeah, so I've made the transition last year, obviously going out to have family out there, yeah. So my brother, my youngest brother, Brian, is out there with his wife, Denise, and they have two little boys, Jack and Keane. So yeah, it's busy when I'm out there as well, but it's lovely to have family out there. As I said, it made it a lot easier last year when I was going out for the first time.
And when did you think, Cora, of actually playing Australian rules football? When did that come into your mind?
Yeah, well, I suppose it was a kind of a chance visit. I was doing some ambassador work for the GEA October 24 months ago. I was in Shanghai at the Asian Games, which I'm an ambassador for probably for the last 5 years. And I met a guy out there from Cavan, Nicholas Walsh, and he had been working for the Giants men's team for a number of years. And he started to tell me that there was a semi-professional women's league happening that year. So that was it. Left Shanghai, came back and was playing with Carnacone and Mayo, and kind of about 5 months, 6 months later, I got a message from Nicholas asking me could the new AFL women's coach, Al McConnell, contact me. He was interested in getting me over playing for season two. So there's a few emails back and over and a couple of phone calls, and Al wanted me to get me out to Australia before the draft. So you're picked to play in the team. So the draft was happening in October last year, and I went out the day before the draft. I couldn't get out before that because we had been successful with Carnacone and Mayo. So I arrived out the day before the draft, met Al, met Nicholas and the club, and you know, signed contracts and decided to go over. Then once club championship was finished, and which happened to be in December the 3rd when we won the All-Ireland with Carnacone, and I flew out to Sydney 2 days later.
Yeah, and of course, is it still the sweetest win when you win with your club?
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt, I suppose, you know, club is where it all starts. You know, as a 7-year-old, it wasn't with Carnacone, and the women that it started for me was with Ballintubber Boys, which, you know, is the same club. There was no girls underage club when I started, and, you know, my career will finish whenever that is with Carnacone as well. And, you know, I'll always be involved in the club, no matter what it is, you know, in 10 or 15 years' time, coaching or involved in some way. So, yeah, certainly, you know, it's all about community, and you're putting on the jersey to represent your friends, your family and your neighbours, and you're hoping to do them proud.
And did you begin, Cora, your footballing life playing for your national school, Burris Carra, alongside your two little brothers or two big brothers?
Yeah, so one was my little brother that's in Australia at the moment, yeah, and my other brother who's 10 months older, yeah. So in Burris Carra National School, you know, I had a very good principal at the time, Art O'Sullivan, who's dad of the former Rosa Tralee, you know, Sullivan. So, yeah, so he was the main guy in school that pushed me to play. I was the only girl that played in school. There was about 100 kids in the school, and you know, any type of sport, he kind of pushed me to play, and he kind of could see that I had a talent. And you know, from there, you know, I was addicted to it straight away and loved it, and you know, made my choice then to go to a secondary school in Ballinrope on the basis that, you know, I wanted to go to a sporty school and continue that through Ballinrope and obviously representing Carnacone, Mayo and now the Giants in Sydney.
But wasn't it lovely in a way, Corin? Do you think it would have made a big difference that, you know, Mr. O'Sullivan, that he did take such an interest in you and did convince you you could play just like the boys?
Yeah, I think he probably noticed straight away. I suppose when I was younger, you know, I tried out every sport. I played numerous sports, from handball, racquetball, you know, volleyball, basketball, soccer, everything that you could play at that time in school. And, you know, obviously he had the more, we call the girly things, the knitting and the dancing and stuff. And, you know, I never really liked them. I really liked the competitive element of the sport. And I suppose when I started to take part in whatever it was, you know, he could see that, you know, there was something in me that was very talented. And yeah, he kept pushing me and bringing me along and bringing me to tournaments along with the boys. And, you know, eventually obviously making boys teams and excelling in them. So yeah, I have a lot to thank for my time in national school. It certainly started my sports career.
And you've always been very thankful, Cora, for all your coaches, and even reading your autobiography, Game Changer. You mentioned Finbar Egan as well, I think, because in a sense, you say your best was your first.
Yeah, exactly. I suppose Finbar probably came in into Mayo when I was a 17-year-old and probably had him for about 6 years up till about 23. But I suppose as a 17-year-old, I was just after losing my mother and it was probably a very difficult time in my life. And Finbar came in to coach Mayo at that time, a couple of months after my mother died. And I suppose, you know, I really owe Finbar a lot from that time. I was probably struggling and probably not realising it at the time. But, you know, he was one guy. He was probably a coach that was probably maybe 10 years ahead of his time with his training and his training methods. And yeah, certainly has made me, you know, the sports person I am, both on and off the field. So yeah, he's a great guy. You know, I'd still have a great time for Finbar. Actually, met him on Wednesday. I was back in my former college in Athlone doing a book signing there, so I met him, you know, and it was great to meet up. And, you know, you mightn't see these people in a number of years and, you know, mightn't even talk to them, but, you know, you straight away have a connection when you meet them because of his time with Mayo and what he's done for me.
You mentioned your mum there. Go right back and just tell me about your parents, about your family life, your mum and dad, where they were from and how many were in your family.
Yeah, well, I suppose, yeah, so I come from a family of eight. There's four boys and four girls and, you know, we're all very close in age. I think there's nearly just under 12 years between the eight of us.
Where do you come?
Yeah, I'm second youngest. So my brother in Australia is the youngest. So there's 11 months between him and myself. And then there's 10 months between me and my next brother. So, yeah, we're kind of like the Irish triplets. as was known back then. Yeah, so, you know, we're from Aurora, part of Mayo, probably about 50 minutes outside Castlebar, the main town. You know, my dad is a dairy farmer, has been for most of his life, probably spent his earlier days in the UK, you know, when he was younger, making money for his family at home, and then came back and inherited my uncle's farm. And then my mom is originally from Clumber. We obviously don't know much about Mom's family, as you would have read in the book. Mom was adopted when she was a baby, and yeah, we don't know who her adoptive parents are, so we obviously don't know much from that side of the family. Yeah, Mom was a housewife for most of our grown up life. I think she started work when I went into about sixth class, so when I was about 11 years of age. And, you know, she just done some part time work as a catering assistant in Mayo General Hospital at the time. So, you know, we're a very rural family. You know, probably didn't have much growing up, but, you know, we're never wanted for much of our parents. They always tried to provide us with the best they could, and, you know, got us all through college. And, you know, we all turned out okay in the end.
It turned out great. The adopting thing is so interesting, though, isn't it, Cor? Because now most people talk about being adopted. But was it one of your siblings who went to just get her birth cert or something?
Yes.
That story in your book. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so obviously Mom got sick when I was in the end of first year in school, and she would have got diagnosed with breast cancer and would eventually end up having lung cancer as well. You know, and I suppose community spirit and everything decided that they'd do a fundraiser for Mom. Herself and Dad were 25 years married, so they'd done a fundraiser. Obviously, she was sick as well, and they decided to send her to Lourdes. You know, they're both Catholic and quite religious, so that would be Mom's first ever journey outside of Ireland. And when you go outside of Ireland, obviously you need a passport. So my older sisters were organising all that for her. So they were looking for her birth cert to get her passport, but no birth cert was to be found. And my oldest sister rang her from Galway saying, you know, Mom, we can't find your birth cert, you know, jokingly saying to her, you must be adopted. And she said, I am. And yeah, that's how, you know, my old sisters found out. And obviously in the book I talk about myself and my younger brothers don't find out till actually the morning of Mom's funeral, where we're just sitting down getting ready to go off to the church. And yeah, my father tells myself and my two brothers.
You were only about 13, weren't you, Cora? You write about this in your book, when you first realised your mother wasn't well.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah, I was just at the end of first year at the time, 13 coming on 14. Yeah, so, you know, Mom would have been sick for quite a while before that, but knew herself she was sick, but as a woman with eight kids and, you know, I suppose rural Ireland back there, you know, she knew there was something wrong. You know, I write in the book that she sat in a doctor's surgery twice, and before she was ready to be called in, she walked out again. So she knew, you know, she knew she'd an idea there was something wrong. She obviously had found a couple of lumps in her breast. So eventually she came home from work one August, and I always remember because it was a roasting hot day, and myself and my sister were sitting in watching telly, and she wasn't too happy, and went straight down to bed. And that night she was still very sick, and the next day the doctor would have been called out because she was so sick, and the doctor would have obviously identified when he came out of the house that she, what was wrong with her, and he told her she needed to go straight to hospital. And I suppose over the next few days, you know, Dad found out obviously then, and over the next few days we were told. So yeah, she fought a hard cancer battle, I think, for the next couple of years, with most of her treatment being based in Dublin because cancer services down west were quite poor. So she spent quite a long time in Luke's and would go for maybe 6 to 8 week periods to get her treatment in Luke's, whether it was radiotherapy or chemo. And eventually then she would, the services in Mayo General would have improved, and she'd eventually got some of her chemo in Mayo General.
And there's never a good age to lose your mother when you're a child, Cora, but 13, 14, you're just going through puberty. It's actually a very tricky age when you're a girl. How did you deal, first of all, with her illness and then with her death?
Yeah, I suppose, you know, I probably only realised a lot of this stuff when I wrote the book. You know, that's probably the first time in 20 years, you know, Mom's 20 years dead since July. So it's probably the first time in 20 years that I've sat down and actually talked about it, which obviously my ghostwriter, Mary White, you know, as a rural family, we probably didn't sit around and chat about it too much. Life moved on. It was difficult. You know, I was probably struggling a little bit in school and didn't really like the school environment. As I said, I chose to go to a different school than my older brothers and sisters, just because of sports. So I didn't really have that many friends from my national school coming to my secondary school, only my brother, and you know, that's obviously, you're not going to hang out with him. So I was struggling a little bit in school and in the school environment, and I suppose then the bombshell to hit at home, that probably even made it more difficult. It was difficult. You know, the only one constant I had through it all was that I was playing a lot of sport at the time. You know, looking back, I was probably on about 13 or 14 teams between soccer and GAA, and a bit of basketball. So that kept me really busy. I suppose when it really started to hit, when she'd be away for periods in Dublin, getting treatment, and to get to Dublin from the west at the time was difficult, and we might get up to see her maybe one Sunday every 5 or 6 weeks, so you know, that probably made it difficult. But you know, life just had to keep going on. And you know, I suppose I decided to do TY then in school, because Mom was probably getting progressively worse. And while, you know, I did TY and went in, you know, not that often, you know, I would have stayed at home to care for Mom, because my older sisters would have been in college or working away. So, yeah, I probably realised more in transition year the battle that she was having, because you were seeing her most of the time and most of the days, and the struggles she was having.
She was obviously a remarkable woman, though, Cora, because even in your book, I mean, at one stage, I think you say, she said, you know, when I'm gone, please don't cry for me.
Yeah, she was. Like, if you're talking to the family at the time, Mom was always the tough one and Dad was the soft one. You know, if you ever wanted anything or go anywhere, you'd ask Dad, you'd ask Mom last. I suppose maybe it was her upbringing, you know, the life that she had. She probably had a tough upbringing, you know, and had spent obviously a time in an orphanage and all of that. So, she, you know, and she, you know, didn't have any siblings. So, you know, she had a tough upbringing, but that was Mom. She was a tough woman. You know, she ever wanted us growing up, it didn't matter. Once we, you know, had good manners, good respect, and, you know, we'd follow certain morals and principles when we grew up, and she very much ingrained that into us, you know. Yeah, she wanted us to do well in education and all that, but once we were, you know, mannerly kids growing up and grew up into, you know, people that she'd be proud of, that's all she ever, you know, pushed into us. And, you know, thankfully, you know, our family has done that. And yeah, she certainly, you know, I probably have a lot of traits that Mom have, you know, and you can see that from the book. You know, I'd be quite like her. I'd be tough, stubborn, a bit, you know, kind of take on a lot of her traits and characteristics. So, you know, that's, there's still a lot for that's around.
She also had a great sense of humour, because tell the little line she had, which I love, about, you know, not running after a man or a bus. I really like that.
Yeah, she used to always say that to my older sister. Yeah, never. There's plenty of buses. There's always another bus to come along. So, yeah, that was mom. You know, she wasn't about, you know, once you were happy as a person or a child, you know, growing up, that was the main thing. You know, she provided everything for us. As I said, you know, we're a rural Irish family that probably didn't have much growing up, but she always made sure that, you know, we went off to school very clean and had everything. And I suppose that's another trait, you know, probably a few of my sisters and myself got from her. She was a bit of a clean freak and everything had to have a place. And, you know, she'd spend hours up at night time making sure the house, she was very house proud. And, you know, as I said, you get a lot of traits and characteristics from your parents. And, you know, I ended up getting a lot from her.
Yeah, I like her line. You should never run after a man or a bus because there's always another one following behind. But you found her really helpful over the past 20 years, haven't you, Cora? I know you feel she's helped you in your career. You still talk to her. You go to her grave.
Yeah, yeah, obviously, yeah, of course. You know, she's rare just to be, you know, strong Catholic people as well. And I suppose, yeah, you know, I probably as a 13, 14, 15 year old watching her struggle. And, you know, she had a real cancer struggle. You know, she tried to fight as best she can. But, you know, I suppose the memories of her being at home suffering or in hospital suffering, you know, as a young person, you're watching that, you know, young people taking a lot, you know, as a young 14 or 15 year old, I used to watch that and I used to see that she'd always put on a brave face, you know, she'd never, you know, she'd always try to be positive and never be down. And, you know, she'd every right to be. And I suppose, you know, she was a very driven woman. And, you know, I suppose that's me probably on the sports field. And I suppose, you know, I put it down to me still playing at 36 years of age and probably being the other side of the world, picking up a professional sport. You know, it's probably down to her because she always said, you know, go after what you want and don't be afraid to do that. And, you know, I suppose I've done that. And every day I take the pitch, whether it's, you know, for Mayo, Carnacone or the Giants or whatever team I'm playing for, you know, I always want to do her proud. And, you know, I know she's still with me in every part of life, and she's with them, you know, the rest of my brothers and sisters and certainly with my dad as well.
And she'd be so proud of you. It must have been so difficult as well when you think about it, Cora, for your dad, because, you know, you still had a younger brother. You're all quite young. And he's left on his own with 8 children.
Yeah, you know, I suppose we're quite a close family. You know, the biggest thing that happened, I suppose, after Mom died is, you know, Mayo football probably took off for us. Mayo ladies won, you know, four out of five All-Irelands in the years after Mom died. And, you know, it took us on a journey as a family, not just me playing, but it took my family on a journey. And they ended up meeting a lot of amazing people, families of the girls that I used to play with. And, you know, they're at matches and celebrations and All-Star awards and different things. And, you know, it took them on a journey. And, you know, when you look back at it as I had to in my book, them 5 or 6 glory years that we had in football, really, you know, just directly after Mom died, the year after Mom died, you know, was a great thing for the family to have, because they'd something to look forward to all the time. And, you know, it was good for Dad because he used to meet, you know, a lot of the dads and moms of the players. So, you know, it was a really great social outlet for him.
How are you such a good player? In other words, what do you need, do you think, Cora, to be a great player? I mean, it's not just talent, is it? You also have to read a game. And what do you mean by that?
Yeah, I suppose, you know, first of all, I'm part of a team. I suppose that's the biggest thing. You know, I'm lucky that I got a talent and I've worked on it. You know, there's many people that can't get talents and don't work on them. I suppose I'm very driven. And quite stubborn. You know, I want to get things done. You know, whatever way that you can get them done, you have to get them done. You know, I probably put in a lot of the extra hard yards. You know, I've lucky enough, you know, have had very good coaches, the likes of Fimber in my life, my club coaches, Beatrice Casey and Jimmy Corbett, and people who I've probably watched and learned so much from. And probably have turned me into the person and the player I am. And I suppose, you know, I have a bit of a coach's head of me. You know, I love watching sport. I love, you know, every type of sport. So, yeah, I love the whole insight into it. And, you know, I was lucky enough then to go to Australia. And you think at 36, you don't have too much more to learn. But, you know, that's the time I've probably learned the most in the past 5 months when I was there, you know, under the coach that was there, Al McCollin. And, you know, he's been a great guy. And I've just, yeah, it's just different sports people. It's just that you're very driven. And you know, you want to succeed, and as I said in my book, you're probably a little bit addicted to sport, and you know no other way. But you know, it's been a brilliant career for me, and a brilliant path in life. And you know, I've probably learned skills and stuff that I couldn't ever learn in a classroom or in college or any other walk of life.
And obviously, you're greatest love in terms of sport is your club, Carnacone. Obviously, it had its own issues in over the past year or so. Are they all resolved now, Cora?
Yeah. So, we had a couple of issues, obviously, with the county board and being, you know, knocked out of championship, and eight of the girls that, you know, left the Mayo team being suspended and all that. Obviously, they're all resolved. Carnacone got knocked out. We got knocked out at Connacht final stage this year against Kilkerran Clonburn there about 2 weeks ago. So, yeah, season is over, bar one or two league matches left for Carnacone. So it's a brilliant place. I'm lucky that I've been from Carnacone, and you know, as I said, we're very much a family out there. You know, we've girls as young as, you know, 13 or 14 on our senior team, and girls as old as 40 plus on our team, and you know, we're just one big unit, and you know, the girls in the team are there through the good days and through the bad days, and you know, we're just lucky as a club. We've been very successful, and I think we've, over the past 20 or plus years, we've built a culture out there, and you know, we're very lucky that we've won a huge amount.
And you're a complete all-rounder, Cora, and as we end, I mean, you're heading out back soon to play Australian rules football. You play rugby, you play soccer, but when you look at your Gaelic career, when you look back on it, 4 All-Irelands, 11 All-Stars, what's been your proudest moment, or is that too hard to say?
Yeah, I suppose, you know, when you're in it and you're still involved and haven't retired, you know, from sport in general, you know, I'm looking at what's next. You know, what's next for me is that I have to give 5 or 6 hard months now to the Giants in Australia. You know, our ultimate goal out there is to get to a grand final and win that. So it's the equivalent to an All-Ireland final over here. And when I come back, my next goal then is to try and, you know, push on and win a county title, Carnacone, a Connacht title, and an All-Ireland title. So it's very hard to look at achievements when you're still involved in it. But, you know, they're all very sweet, but, you know, I have to go back to your sweetest achievements are with the people that are, you know, that are beside you and live next door to you and that you've played with since you were 7 years of age. You know, I've girls, Michelle McGing being one that I've been playing with since I was 7, and she's still involved in her club. You know, so that's hugely important. So, yeah, and any of the wins, you know, have been brilliant. Probably the wins with Carnacone and the last year's win in 2017 is probably the sweetest, but you know, they're all right up there.
Well, look, Cora, safe journey back to Sydney. Have a great time there. I loved your book. It's called Game Changer, your autobiography by Cora Staunton, published by Penguin, and best of luck, because I know it's nominated for Best Sports Book in the Irish Book Awards. Thanks for chatting to me this morning, Cora.
Thanks a million, Miriam.